This is my first time.
First time.
Welcome to Babylon 5 for the first time. Not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I'm watching Babylon 5 for the first time.
Mr. Aiken.
Mr. Allen.
I'm Brent Allen. I'm also watching Babylon 5 for the first time. Jeff and I are two Star Trek podcasting veterans watching Babylon 5 for the first time. We're searching for Star Trek-like messages and deciding if we should have watched the show sooner.
Are you doing a walk-in right now? You doing okay? Because if you are doing a walk-in, you should probably reshoot it, I think.
Much like they should have reshot some of this episode with a particular guest actor that they had on the episode.
Wow.
We're going to get into all of that, though, Jeff.
I'm picking up exactly what you're putting down, but I have some thoughts there as well. We're getting right into it. But before we get into it, it's really important to talk about what Brent just said. We are Star Trek podcasters, and we're trying really hard to let Babylon 5 be Babylon 5. But we're going to compare it to Star Trek.
Well, you know why, though, Jeff? And not just that we're going to pull it in because that's who we are. We say it right up front. But also, we have heard for the last 30 years this whole thing about how Deep Space Nine ripped off Babylon 5 or Babylon 5, and there's all these comparisons back and forth. So this show is set up to be compared specifically to Star Trek. So some of it's going to come from that as well. I ain't lying.
Absolutely. And maybe as we get further in this, there's going to be a reckoning. Maybe we're going to make that call, right? Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, but to keep us in check, we have our rule of three. Each one of us can use up to three Star Trek references between right now and the point of the episode where we actually compare it to Star Trek. We could use it a little bit in that part. But Brent, you've brought it up before. I love our community.
They're so good.
So much. Mm-hmm. They're amazing. Absolutely amazing. I've got a couple things I'm going to read from people in there, and I'm going to start off. So we have a website. Babylon5first.com. It's the number 5 and the word first.com. And there's a little button on there. You can send us an email. And I get those emails, Jeff. I get them. I love them. They're great. And we get a lot of them. Ysidro, I think that's how you say your name, Ysidro, and I apologize if I said it wrong, sent this great email. Just said, just wanted to say I'm loving this podcast. B5 is my favorite series ever. And with Star Trek having been an important in my life as well, it's great getting both of your opinions on this show. I hope, no matter what, you at least get into season 2.
You see, Dro, I can promise you will at least get into season 2 because being Star Trek podcast veterans, does that count? This counts, doesn't it?
Does it?
It does, because I just referenced it. Being Star Trek podcast veterans, one thing that we're very, very, very well aware of, first seasons tend to struggle. And it's really the first two seasons sometimes tend to struggle. It gets better, but usually it's around that third season that things really start taking off. So we're in it, honestly, all the way through, but we'll at least be there through. We'll give it its fair shot. But thank you so much. I'm glad that you are joining us and coming in. Jeff, you know, one of the things I love about people and how this is developing, we're at a spot where we're beginning to recognize the same names coming back. Like, we're actually developing relationships with you guys out there, which is really cool, and seeing you guys come in and respond week after week. So Ysidro, first of all, if we said it wrong, send us back a pronunciation guide so we can say it correctly. And two, if we said it right, then just let us know, because that's awesome. But thank you for your email. You rock.
And here's your hit. Haven't even started the recap. We're down to 2 for you.
That's all right.
But it was a good one, and you're right. And speaking of people that we see, we start to see the names quite a bit. We have Retro Robot Radio,
who's
a regular part. Regular part of the community on YouTube. But he's got some really fun facts about Lanier. He says
Lanier,
and I'm going to say Lanier.
Lanier.
I think that's right.
Lanier, like angular and linear. It's linear.
Linear. Linear.
I have no idea. Actually, I think it's Lanier. It's supposed to be Lanier. Lanier. There you go. All right, go ahead. What is Retro Robot say?
Retro Robot Radio says, and I'm going to mispronounce this, the actor's name too, but he says, fun fact, Bill Mummy, veteran child actor who played Lanier, was 40 years old when he got the part on B5. Yeah, can you believe that? Guy looks maybe 23, 24. I wish I had that problem. But he says he was actually, and this is what blows my mind here, he was actually a year older than the actress playing Delenn, despite playing her young aide. You may have seen Billy on Twilight Zone, Lost in Space, Wagon Train, Bewitched, I Dream of Jeannie, and The Munsters. He gets around.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Other fun fact. Did you ever see Harry Potter? Harry Potter series?
Yeah, a couple times.
The girl who played Moaning Myrtle.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The ghost of a 14-year-old girl was 37 years old when she filmed that.
What?
Yep.
No way. Yep. No way. Because she looks maybe 16.
Right. Right.
So this is, I call this the Andrea Zuckerman issue from 90210, where Gabrielle Cartelis played a 16-year-old when 90210 started. She was 32 at the time. And not a bad deal, honestly.
Hey, you're looking great.
Right? When I was 15 years old and I was able to get into R-rated movies because I looked older, I thought that was super cool. Now I'm in my mid-40s. Not so cool anymore.
Because they're offering you the senior discount?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, we got our website, right? Babylon 5 First, the number 5, the word first.com. We also have a Twitter at Babylon First. And Slightly Fixated, who I think we've mentioned before on this show, really great conversations with Slightly Fixated on Twitter, says, quote, Jakar and Londo are the show. At Babylon First, you're preaching to the choir. I am the choir. But babies, stop saying things are not going to get addressed or explained. Because boy, are you going to eat crow for it every time.
Yikes. Listen, as long as you just you put it in a pie, you bake it up, I'm happy to eat that crow, baby. I'm happy to do that.
Every time.
Every time.
Well, and frankly, like that's what, I don't know, sci-fi television has taught us that there's going to be a lot of throwaway stuff that we see in episodes. All of you keep telling us that's not the case. But just like children, we're not going to listen to the experts, the people who've watched it. We're going to be like, no, this is all garbage.
We got to find out for ourselves.
Yeah, I'm gladly going to eat that crow.
All right. Well, hey, listen, thanks everybody who are commenting. And that's just a very tiny sampling of the people that are out there. Jeff, it's time for another game that we like to play here.
We love our
games. Love our games. This is the time when we kind of do like a little review from last week. When we get to the end of the episode, we read just the title only. We don't know the description. We do our best to not even look at the thumbnail of the picture that they put up there. We look at the description. We predict what the next episode is going to be about just based on that. And this is the time where we have now watched the episode. We're going to revisit what you and I both predicted that this episode, Survivors, was going to be about and just see how close we got. Jeff, I think I want to go first on this one.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty sure you were way closer than I was.
I'm so excited about mine.
So I said, this was coming off the Children of the Egg episode. I forget the name of it, but it was the one about the kid who didn't want to die.
How could you forget?
It's coming off of that. And what I said was, there was a bunch of people who fell off their bikes as kids and they got cut open and lost their spirit, but they're still alive and they're in hiding and they heard about good stuff on Babylon 5 and then they came out of woodwork. That's what I said this episode was about. I get a score of -2.
I think that one's going to come up in season 3, though, the falling off the bike.
They tell us it's not wasted.
Exactly.
They tell us it's not wasted.
Well, Brent, I guessed that Home Guard was going to plant a bomb that would explode and damage a huge section of the ship and maybe kill a couple of people. So I got Home Guard. I got bomb. I got explode a section of the ship. Here's where I went way off. It was going to be the council chambers, and then it was going to turn into like a courtroom procedural thing where they piece everything together. I still think that'd be a pretty great episode.
You also said a couple of people and only one person got it, but still
only one. So yeah, so I'm going to give myself like 3 points.
Yeah.
-2.
I mean, that's you nailed it, Jeff. You really did. That's fantastic.
I'm feeling good.
That is absolutely
Well, we have more episodes coming up after this, and so we'll just see how far I can miss next time. There you go.
All right. Well, speaking of Survivors, that is the episode that Jeff and I are discussing today. Now, for those of you who haven't seen it in a while, and I'm not sure that I'd blame you if you haven't, or those who simply haven't watched at all, but you're listening to us anyway. Jeff, I am very glad that this was your week to do the recap, because holy cow, this episode has a lot going in on it. And I have no idea how you're going to boil this down, but good luck, man. Have at it.
I'm actually not going to boil it down. I've got 46 minutes of content coming up right now, so get ready as I just read the script. It's the only way to boil it down. Ah, I'm kidding. Here we go. Bum, bum, ba, bum, bum, ba, bum, ba, bum, ba, bum, bum. Earth Force One is coming to Babylon 5. President Luis Santiago is visiting the station to drum up support for alien immigration legislation that he's pushing. Oh, and he's bringing along a wing of Star Fury fighters that, you know, probably should have been there about 2 years ago, but hey, at least he's bringing them now. They've got crews working overtime to retrofit the fighter base because they had very little notice that this was happening. But sadly, that will all be for naught. A bomb explodes, killing all but one of the workers, Nolan. Nolan is in bad shape, but Dr. Franklin's working really hard on him. The president's entourage arrives to prep the station for his arrival and to take over the investigation of the bombing. Major Liana Kemmer is leading the entourage. Garibaldi served with her father, Frank, at Europa, which is apparently a really, really, really bad place to have to serve. They were very close, became good friends, and Garibaldi knew Liana from the time she was a child. On Europa, Garibaldi was tough on crime, so the bad guys wanted to get back at him, and they killed Frank to do it. And this has caused a long rift between Liana and her Uncle Mike. Despite Sinclair's best efforts, the investigation gets handed over to Kemmer. She questions Nolan, who, in his dying breath, says Garibaldi. Garibaldi planted the bomb. Kemmer calls for his arrest, and Garibaldi does the thing that every innocent person should do when they're about to be arrested. He kicks dude in the guts and runs away. He works to try and build up a defense and to find out what actually happened, all while trying to stay hidden on the station. But his mid-90s collarless dress shirt doesn't help him at all. He ends up in a bar, alone, face to face with the greatest enemy he's ever faced, alcohol. When his friend Frank was killed, and other times when his career's taken a bad turn, he expressed his disease, his alcoholism, as he put it, by crawling in to the bottle. While at the bar, he starts drinking again. Despite working with Londo, accusing Jakar and the Narn, everything he can do, he can't shake the charges. Drunk, he's easily arrested and taken to Kemmer. As she questions him, they find home guard paraphernalia in Nolan's quarters, and together, they end up piecing together that Kemmer's aide, the very, very innocently named Cutter, is the one that perpetrated the whole thing. They're sure he's on his way to set up another bomb as the president is about to arrive. They cut Cutter off, just barely avoiding the near destruction of the station and the likely assassination of the president. While being treated in med lab, Garibaldi tries to apologize for drinking. Sinclair and Franklin both kind of play it off, but Sinclair reminds him that he doesn't have to face his struggles alone. Kemmer and Garibaldi share a moment before she leaves. They reconcile their relationship, and he wishes her well. Brent, what did you think of Survivors?
Well, Jeff, I got to tell you, we've been on a really, really good run of episodes here on Babylon 5. But this one, in all honesty, very much reminds me that we are still, in fact, in season one of a 1990s sci-fi show.
Agreed. Yes.
if you remember the episode Infection.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where I said that episode was a piece of hot garbage for the first 27 minutes. And then it turned on a dime and got really good. Okay, this episode didn't do it. But I got to tell you, very similar to that episode, I really just thought this was going to be angry Garibaldi, like through the whole episode. And I was like, they just messed with his character. I don't like this. This is cringeworthy. But I wound up, even in the midst of an episode that I don't think was a great episode, I found a lot of elements that I really wound up liking throughout the course of this episode. And a very non-Star Trek message that we'll get into that I think is very painfully obvious, tackling something that honestly I don't know that Star Trek really would tackle, certainly not in the way that they did here. So yeah, overall, not my favorite episode, but I really like what they did. Is that weird? Like, can those two coexist like that?
Yeah, actually, in my notes, and we'll get to it, I think this episode did exactly what it meant to do, right? And I think what it meant to do was important. I think it was kind of sloppy in how it did some of it. And I'm going to, like, I'm shocked by this. And in fact, like, so we don't talk about this before we come on and record the podcast, right? We text mm-hmm. about logistics or whatever. We don't talk about the episode. I broke that rule a little bit and I told you, I'm like, hey, note who wrote this episode.
You did.
Yeah. Cause like J. Michael Straczynski writes almost everything, but it seems like, and we talked about this, when he pulls someone else in, like he writes the "we're moving the plot forward" episodes, but then he brings in DC Fontana or David Gerrold, mm-hmm. right, to really like focus in on a person or a thing. And I think that happened here. I'm gonna probably say his name wrong, but Mark Scott Zikri wrote this one. Well known, he wrote a couple years. It was 4 years after this episode. He wrote Deep Space Nine: Far Beyond the Stars. One of the greatest episodes of Star Trek, one of the greatest episodes of television ever written, ever. And I'm going to give you, I want to give a shout out to the Beam Me Up podcast, your Star Trek podcast, because you and Matt, this was the episode you put out for this one is one of the most powerful Star Trek episodes, one of the best, most well done Star Trek podcast episodes I've ever heard in my life.
Thank you.
Really, you're welcome. That's great.
I very much appreciate that. And I don't mind receiving that, because I truly believe that is the most important podcast episode I have ever been a part of.
Yeah.
Like ever. And I would like, I think everybody should go listen to it. It's that
Agreed.
Poignant, important, and it is a discussion that we really, really need to have. And in fact, Jeff, if you can make a note, let's remember, I'd love to link that in the show notes.
Totally.
That particular episode. And if you guys haven't seen that episode of Deep Space Nine, Far Beyond the Stars, please go watch it and watch it again and then watch it again and go do that. Because it's the only episode Matt and I have ever brought anybody else in on for the main show. And it's basically because Matt and I couldn't have done that episode ourselves. And thank you. I appreciate you bringing that up, because you're absolutely right. Yeah. And I saw the name. I didn't get a chance to look up. I knew he was a Trek writer, but I wasn't sure which episode it was. And yeah, that's all clicking in my head right now.
Stand by. We'll be right back. Are you ready to take your Babylon 5 for the first time experience to the next level? With our exclusive Patreon, you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff that you can only find there. Our recording notes, unedited reaction videos, an exclusive Discord community, and you can even be listed as a producer of the show. Plus, we even offer exclusive meet and greets and hangouts. You won't find this kind of experience anywhere else. Get all these amazing benefits, plus the opportunity to interact with other fans from around the world. It's being part of a huge community where everyone shares the same appreciation for Babylon 5. Subscribe at patreon.com/Babylon5first. That's the number 5 and the word first, to get access to these incredible benefits. That's patreon.com/Babylon5first. We can't wait to see you there. So beammeuppod.com. We'll link it in the show notes. Make sure you check it out. And again, like, I mean, not to harp on a Star Trek thing, but you don't have to like Star Trek. This is just an important episode of television.
Yeah.
Period.
Absolutely.
And if you do like Star Trek and you're into fun stuff, he also wrote First Contact from the Next Generation a couple years before this episode. You know, that's the one where Lilith from Cheers tried to
get with Riker.
Have some extra planetary relations with Riker. Uh-huh. So I got to say, and you and I talk about this quite a bit, where we can't judge television from the past through the lens of today.
Right.
But I just want to acknowledge that I don't think that they handled Garibaldi's alcoholism very well in this episode at all.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Franklin made a joke about it. The medical doctor made a joke about his blood being 100 proof.
Yeah.
And Sinclair, I mean, after kind of ribbing him a little bit, I appreciated his piece. You know, you're not alone. You don't have to go through that. That was very helpful, but just as a whole, mm-hmm. I couldn't let this move forward without without saying at least that much.
You're right. They didn't. And there's also a piece of me that wonders, even in doing that, if we look at it today and we say it wasn't enough, was it a step forward in 1994? Maybe it was. I've never seen another episode of television do what this one did, you know, and we'll get into that. But specifically the spot where he's holding the drink and you can tell him, he's like, should I, shouldn't I? And then when he actually takes the drink, I screamed out loud. Like I really did. Like my kids were like, whoa, dad, what? And I'm like, and we'll talk. Right now is not the time. But anyway, Jeff, overall, what'd you think of the episode?
That's how I felt. Yeah. I think it kept wanting to get really good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it
was
like, yeah. And it just never quite picked up, you know? And I think part of it was this episode hinged on two people. This episode hinged on Garibaldi, who, like you just described, not just as a character, but as an actor, I've got so much more respect, and I know so much more about Garibaldi, and where he used to, I don't know, he played off and kind of acted as like, I don't know, I'm kind of a perv and a joke and whatever. This guy's got some for real depth, and I the end result of this is I care about Garibaldi more after watching this than I did beforehand.
In a way that when you got to Sinclair's episode that focused on him, you still didn't care about Sinclair after that episode the way you care about Garibaldi now after his episode.
Exactly.
Well, while we're in this, let's just focus on the character of Garibaldi for right now, since we're talking about it. The basic piece, and you mentioned it in your recap, was Garibaldi has a history of alcoholism that he has beat up to this point. He has been sober for a certain number of years, which great on him.
Since he's been on Babylon 5.
Exactly. Yeah. Great on him for having been sober. He had a situation way back when somebody got killed, and for some reason people put the blame on him. And even the way he was describing it, I was like, dude, that's not anywhere near your fault. Like at all, but whatever, people, you know, you got to give him a reason. They gave him a reason, and he went on a, I'm going to defend myself speak, you know, like I've got to go do this to clear my name, which cool. And then he falls off the wagon at some point and he gets hammered drunk. And then he's sober like 20 minutes later, but the doctor says he still has 100 proof, blood alcohol level. And he kind of ends the episode a little bit in the same place that he began the episode. Like it resets it for him. Although we now know this about his character. The question I have is, did JMS know this about this character before going into this episode? And did the actor know this about this episode or about this character before going into this episode? Because nothing that we saw here out of Garibaldi lines up with anything we have seen in the previous 10 episodes. He wasn't pervy. He wasn't joking. He wasn't like none of these things. We've never seen him be heavy-handed. We've never seen him just order water at the bar. We've never seen any of that kind of stuff. Like this all felt very new writing to the character, which I'm fine with. It just felt like a whole new deal that they're doing with Garibaldi. And I really wonder where they're going with his character. Like, will he still kind of be the jokester a little bit of the group? Cause he's kind of, you know, his second favorite thing in the world is Duck Dodgers,
right?
He has Looney Tunes, right? Like, is he still that guy? Or is he the recovering alcoholic who just recently fell off the wagon?
I love that perspective, because I think one of the things we knew about Garibaldi coming in is he had a bad track record. Even the reporter who came in and the one thing was like, you know, you've popped from state, you know, from assignment to assignment. And that was one of those lingering, like, what's going on with Garibaldi things. And now we know. But when I watch, so there's the scene on the Zocalo, which can we talk about just really, I mean, just, I just want to mention the horrible 90s neon sign that just says Zocalo in like weird font.
I loved the one that was behind them on the little transport thingy. It said something to the effect of like, hold the handrails at all times or something like that. But the font was like super weird.
That whole scene, this is a tangent, but I made notes on this scene because not only did this make the blue screen from mid 80s B movies that were on USA Up All Night make that look legit and good. But you're right. There was this weird, like, they were swinging on horizontal bars thing, like holding onto hand. It's like, is there no floor?
Right.
On the, that, right. So weird.
Now, just because I know people have already commented in the video down below, Jeff.
Right.
We understand that this was a low budget production of 1994. We get it. We're just obviously pointing out the thing that's right in front of us of saying it looked bad.
Well, frankly, put it somewhere else. Just put them in a different part of the state. I don't know.
Can I give you a good part about that scene that I liked, though?
Yeah.
The thing that I really did, like, watching them come onto that transport, there's Ivanova, which I keep saying her name wrong. It's not Ivanova. It's
Ivanova.
Ivanova. Ivanova. I keep saying Ivanova. It's Ivanova. It's Garibaldi. There's a Narn. And then a couple people later, there's a Centauri. And they're all just getting on like they're just going to work. Now, we know that Narn and Centauri have a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost get the impression that it's not just a personal thing between a couple. Like, these guys are generally going at it as a species. Those two guys just kind of ignored each other. And I kind of liked seeing that on Babylon 5. Like, they can coexist. And then when we saw them traveling, you had the Narn sitting in the background of Garibaldi and Ivanova.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly thought that was a dummy. I thought it was a mannequin in Narn makeup because that person sat so dead still. It didn't move a head, didn't move eyes, didn't do anything until the speaker lady came on and was like, this is your stop. And like, they kind of turned their head to get up. It was weird, but I really did it. I don't know why that jumped out of me that here's a Centauri and here's a Narn coming on and they're just coexisting. That's pretty cool given the history of their people. But outside of that, that's the stuff that was catching my attention at the first of this episode.
Well, yeah, like going into that little scene, but I want to get back to what you were saying about Garibaldi, but these tangents are really good. I think that what that says though, with the Narn and the Centauri, it really speaks to that whole kind of mindset where it's the people in power that are at war, the militaries that kind of get in, but like the day-to-day people are generally just day-to-day. In fact, I'm wearing the t-shirt today, but Rush in their Power Windows record has this powerful, powerful song. That's most Rush songs are very powerful, but one called Territories. Mm-hmm. It's about that exactly, where it's just, you know, why they have a line in there about one is why move around the world when Eden was so near? And another line about, hey, we moved this, we did this thing. But I mean, when back home, I've got better people, better food and better beer. The Centauri and the Narn, just your day-to-day people just want to go to work and just do their jam, you know?
And not to derail the importance of what you just said, but if anybody out there wants to check out Jeff's super cool shirt, as well as the super cool posters on his background, head over to our YouTube channel. Hello to everybody on YouTube right now. I'm talking to the people on the podcast platforms out there. Head over to our YouTube channel, Babylon 5, for the first time. And you can catch the video of Jeff and I doing this right here.
Pretty cool. But with Garibaldi, you had talked, like, because there's this really wild scene on the Zocalo where there's petty criminal trying to steal a couple credits and he just goes to town. Like Sinclair's got to intervene and pull him off. And it felt like out of nowhere. I read that as this Kemmer, as Liana, has had such an impact on him that just her presence is, you know, pushing him into a place he's never been before. I read it as that, the reaction to her. Right. But you saying that too, like, I don't know. It is. This is I feel like Garibaldi in this episode is a character inspired by Michael Garibaldi, right? Yeah.
My note that I wrote in that particular scene was angry Garibaldi is not the best Garibaldi.
Agreed.
You know, like it just, he went 0 to 90 for no real justified reason.
The Garibaldi we've seen is intentional. He's smart where he investigates, like as a detective, as a police officer, like he has shown wild levels of competence through every episode that we've seen him in so far. And yeah, this was totally just that, you know, not on my block, kid, kind of thing. That's not him.
I mean, I'm glad for him to bust somebody trying to straight up steal a dude's money, but you know, taking the guy and shoving him up against a wall when that's not who you are. You know, the guys over at Mission Log Podcast talk about, particularly with the original series, because they do a Star Trek podcast too. And man, I'm using my references not in about,
I know,
about gonna... whatever. Anyway, but they, particularly with TOS, I remember them talking a lot. TOS is the original series for those of you who aren't in the Star Trek lingo. This is Kirk and Spock back in the 60s. They talk about the gumbification of some of these characters where, like, you get to the beginning of an episode and all of a sudden this character is doing something that they have never done before that is completely out of character for them for the purpose of going on the journey of the episode and getting back to who they're supposed to be. But there's this weird, they just sort of stretch and pull you just to fit whatever situation the script calls for you to be in, even if it's not really your character. I felt that's what was going on with Garibaldi in this particular episode, was they were trying to do something with him that really wasn't who he's been so far, which is why I question, did they know about this particular part of his past? Did the actor know about this part of his past? Or are we watching them write it here in front of us? And how does this affect him going forward? How does this affect how the actor plays Garibaldi going forward? And I'm very curious to find that out as we move forward in the show.
Yeah, because he did an incredible job acting in this role. Like, I didn't doubt. In fact, in Mind War, mm-hmm. we talked about if Garibaldi and Bester actually went at it, you were like, Garibaldi would wipe the floor with him. And I'm like, no, Bester, he's that little guy. He's got the psychic thing going. Mm-hmm. Dude, Garibaldi's legit. He took on that big, massive guy all on his own.
Right.
When he was running away, had him tied up, was going to win until he got overpowered. It's 3-on-1. And he just kind of looks around and he's like, all right, let's do this. And he goes to town. Like, he holds his own for a minute. And then Sinclair comes and gets him. But, like, Garibaldi's the angry Garibaldi. We'll call him angry Garibaldi. Mm-hmm. Is the real deal. But I just feel like he was portrayed so well through this. I believed him as a legit badass. I believed him as somebody panicked and going to Londo, hoping that he had some answer or help. And I believed him as an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know, that scene that you talked about when he's holding that, his eyes, like if you watch his, it's real.
Yeah.
You know, in that moment, and just the look of defeat, I guess I want to say, mm-hmm. when he's like, here it goes. I didn't scream, but I had a visceral, no, it was a really well done scene.
This is a man who feels like he knows what it's like to struggle with addiction. Mm-hmm. And whatever substance that is, it feels like he knows, or he did some research or something, because he played it to perfection. I guess let's go ahead and talk about it while we're here. When he made that choice, to watch him struggle with making a choice showed on screen. And when I talk about in an episode that really wasn't that good, there were moments that I just thought were jewels. This was one of them. He depicted the way I have always defined addiction. And an addiction to me, the best definition I've ever been able to come up with is, addiction makes you do what you don't want to do when you're in your right mind. When you're in your right mind, you're going, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this, but I find myself doing it anyway. That's addiction. And he's sitting here going, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And I thought, I don't know about you, Jeff. I'm going, oh, he poured the drink. Oh, there's no way he's drinking it. There's no way he's going to put it back down and
yep.
he's going to conquer this. And I thought for sure, as soon as he did that, talk about subverting expectations, because he sure as heck drank that thing. And he went down and he crawled into that bottle, to use his phrase. He did it at absolutely the worst time ever. He is on the run.
I know.
He is going to get caught now.
Yeah. He got walked right out and got arrested. Like, oh, wow.
Whatever.
Yeah. But I do think on the subverting expectations, we had that in Survivors or in Believers. Believer. That's our rule. We use it all the time. But where there's no way they're going to kill the kid.
Right.
Oh my God, they killed the kid.
Right.
There's no way. No way he's going to take. Oh my God, he took the drink.
Right.
Like, lesson learned, Babylon 5. Like, we're learning our lesson the hard way here.
There you go. There you go. Can we compare? Jerry Doyle, the name of the mm-hmm. actor. Sorry, it's been leaving my mind. Jerry Doyle, what he showed me in this episode, the man can act.
Yeah.
And I do want to make sure we get to the spot, probably closer to the end, where we talk about his decision and the fallout from that decision. Can we please compare her to our guest for this episode, Elaine Thomas?
So I was going to say earlier that this episode hinged on two people, on Garibaldi, mm-hmm. right? Doing his whole piece, and Kemmer selling her part. And to launch our conversation, I will say that one party in this equation definitely delivered the goods.
Yes.
And we just finished talking about him.
Yes, we did. All right. Here goes my third one. I'm going to use them all. I couldn't decide as I was watching this with Elaine Thomas, as that's the name of the actress. I couldn't decide if she was a bad actor or if it was just the character. And I really felt the same way about Jeri Ryan when she first came on playing Seven of Nine in Voyager. Seven of Nine as a character is a very stoic character, a very monotone character. Obviously, Jeri Ryan as a woman, she's a very, very pretty lady. And when she first came on, I'm sitting there going, is she really acting? Like, is she just that bad of an actress? Like, I understand her character is supposed to be this way a little bit, but she played that role like so straight, especially the first bunch of episodes that she was on. Mm-hmm. Until we got to episodes where she got to break out of that character. And particularly I'm thinking of the one where they touched on multiple personality syndrome.
Yeah.
And in that where you go, oh no, Jeri Ryan can act. That girl can throw down. She's making choices for her character of Seven of Nine that make total sense. And now she's not just a pretty face. She's a fantastic actress. And there's a whole new level of respect. I don't know that we're ever going to find that out about Elaine Thomas. I can't recall anything else I've seen her in. I feel like I might have seen her in a few things. But this character of Liana was just so hard to watch, especially at the beginning of this episode, but throughout. And the way that she specifically talks to Sinclair, she is a major. He is a commander. I don't care if you're on a presidential detachment. You put some respect on that name when you're talking to a commander major, and you do not come in and order these guys around the way you have been doing and throw that. I don't care what kind of authority you think you have. That's not how this works. And Sinclair, shame on him for taking it for so long.
Yeah.
Ivanova, do you see what happened to her? Liana came in and tried stepping up to Ivanova, and Ivanova turned around and you said, I am a station commander out here. You're going to respect me, lady. Stop it.
It's so great because Ivanova had him run maintenance to shut down the comms so she couldn't call and get like help. And well, sorry. She's so great because like she's smiling while Ivanova's on the screen and she's all customer service. Oh, you know, I'd love to help you, but you know, we got maintenance going. Well, I need to do blah, blah, blah. Well, you'll need to request that. Well, then I request. No, your request is denied. Click.
Although I got to say, I hated her hair in this episode. Complete side note. Yeah, I hated it because it made her look so cute. And I don't necessarily mean that in a good way. Like it made her look like a young girl. Ivanova is this very strong character. And I'm probably going to say something's going to make somebody mad out there, guys. I'm really not trying to be sexist when I say this. Go ahead.
Let me help. Cause I think you're right. She's very formal. When she's on duty. And we saw that in, what was it? The war prayer when she met Malcolm Biggs and she was like, you know, and they had their night and she had to rush in and they even made the joke where she came in. Yeah. And Garibaldi's like, oh, you should be. And she's like, you should be worried about things other than my appearance.
Right.
But that is again, like different Garibaldi, a little bit of a different Ivanova too.
Yeah. And okay, Brent, you should be worried about other things other than Ivanova's appearance and her hair. You're absolutely right. I agree. Yet still, visually, it took some of the edge off of Ivanova for me until she did that moment you just talked about a minute ago. And I was like, oh, there she is. That's still her. She's awesome. She's awesome. Still probably my favorite character on the show.
She's so great. Yeah, Kemmer was, I struggled. And I actually went and looked. So I think, gosh, as long as we're we're being superficial, let me go there. So when it comes to sexual attraction, everyone kind of has a type, right? Sure. Elaine Thomas, the Kemmer there, that's Jeff's type right okay. there. And so, oh, hi, what's this? And I'm like, there has to be more. She can't be this bad. It's literally what I'm thinking. Where else could I see her? Uh-huh. And so I did the IMDb. She only has a couple of credits.
Yeah.
Some soap operas. And then she's done some producing on there. I can't help but think or wonder that she was like friends with somebody and got hooked up with this role. I think, and it's especially, I think, shown in the last scene with Garibaldi and her as they're like mm-hmm. hugging and you know, kind of reconciling, coming back together. Oh, that fell so flat. And it was because of her. And it's like, it could have been so, everything could have been, like, there was a, before he got arrested, there was a scene where they're in the hallway and he's like, look, I loved Frank with all my heart. And he's trying to open up. And she might as well have just said, well, excuse me, Chief Security Officer. However, my protocols demand that I am unhappy with you still. Like, mm-hmm. There was depth there. There was stuff. And she didn't even scratch the surface.
So I think I'm ending this episode on her with, she just wasn't good. She just wasn't good. How did you feel about the idea of their relationship being, she is the daughter of a friend? Did you buy that at all? Like, she certainly was the right age for it. She certainly had that kind of stuff going on, but
I think she was the right age. I don't know that he was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe because they were friends, like, right. So Frank Kemmer might have been an older guy, right? You know, or whatever. And then kind of took Garibaldi under his wing. And so he's in that kind of middle thing. I bought it from Garibaldi. I didn't buy it from her at all. Like,
that's fair. Okay.
Yeah. There's the scene when he's drunk and then she arrests him and she's like, oh, drunk again, Uncle Mike. Uh-huh. And like, there was supposed to be venom in that. Yeah. Literally, it was just a person reading words off of a page.
Yep. Yep. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. And you know, the consistency with what she called him, sometimes she called him Michael. Sometimes she called him Garibaldi. Sometimes she called him Chief. Sometimes she called him, in that one spot, she called him Uncle Mike. She should have called him Uncle Mike again at the end of the episode if we could rewrite it. Like, oh, Uncle Mike, like, have some sort of reconciliation that lets you do that.
If you want to talk about some cool acting, though, and a great character.
I would love to talk about better
McGrath.
Acting.
Let's talk about McGrath.
Yeah.
Fly dude.
Yeah. Insect dude.
I loved him, but I tell you what, I don't know which came first, the fly or the Ferengi, but he's Quark beat for beat. Like,
oh, you think so?
I mean, he's not behind a bar, but he's you police, me business. I'm doing business. Those were words right out of Quark's mouth.
Fair enough. Yeah. For the first time, like I know we've seen him before. I don't recall ever actually having like a big conversation with him like this before.
Like Soul Hunter had not quite as big, but this is the most, but that's the one I remember.
Right.
Murder Soul Hunter.
So yeah. I hope we get more. Like, I mean, clearly he's a puppet and you know, somebody's voicing him, but I really, really hope we get more. Cause I want more of him in this show. Like that could be a good, he's a broker for trouble.
Mm-hmm.
There could be some fun stuff with this character.
Yeah. I would love if like they started to give him, you know, Quark was that, you know, hey, you know, I'll hook you up with illegal this, I'll smuggle this, I'll whatever. Also, I have a Ferengi heart of gold where it'd be cool if they started to give McGrath a little bit of a heart, like where you're like, oh, look, he's fun. And I doubt very much that's going to happen, but I think it would be kind of cool. Real quick on Kemmer and the crew. So I think they were wearing different uniforms or at least a different color of uniform or something. Yeah. I felt like with the uniforms and just the people they cast, Cutter and all the other aides that came with her, I feel like they went straight to Nazi central casting. And they're like, we need a bunch of Nazis. And here's some kind of Nazi uniforms. We're not being subtle about who this is at all. Yeah.
Space Nazi. Yeah. Yeah. They did. Also not the best actors.
No.
Because the most cringeworthy moment for me for the entire episode involved Cutter. And it's the moment when Liana is in the med lab and she's getting this guy up and Franklin's out there like, let me in. And he's like, no, I'm not letting you in. And here comes Commander Sinclair. And what does he say? He's like, step aside or by God, I'll blow you out an airlock or something like that. And he just goes, okay.
Yeah.
Like what? What? You're supposed to be part of a presidential detachment that is like above everybody else, apparently. But if you're going to threaten to blow me out of an airlock, okay, fine. Go on in. It'll be fine.
First time I watched this episode, I felt the same way. I'm like, oh my God, what? Second time? No, they wanted Sinclair there. They wanted Sinclair there to hear Nolan say Garibaldi's voice because Garibaldi planted the bomb. Otherwise, if it was just Kemmer that heard it or Garibaldi was in the room when it happened, like I don't think they wanted Garibaldi in there. But I was like, oh, they're making sure Sinclair hears this so he'll support taking him into custody and doing everything.
Right. Can I make fun of this episode a little more?
Totally.
So the charge was conspiracy to commit sabotage.
Yeah.
Not setting off a bomb, blowing up the station, killing a person. No. Conspiracy, which, by the way, how many people is required to make it a conspiracy?
More than one, I would think.
More than one, right?
Yeah.
I think five in our world today, whatever it is in the future, it's still more than one for conspiracy, not all the other stuff.
Right. It could be attempted sabotage or intent to commit sabotage.
But that's not even sabotage. Sabotage is making something not work that it's supposed to work. This was attempted murder.
Yeah.
Attempted assassination of the president. That's what it is. It's not conspiracy to commit sabotage. Are you kidding me? That's the difference. See, if she had actually been a command level security person, she would have gotten the charge correct.
Yeah, she would have known that, because apparently, like, you get special powers when you're command level something. Right. Yeah.
Right. You could just tell people you'll blow them out an airlock and they move out of the way.
Yeah. Bringing up the president. I felt cheated that he came on to the station and we did not get to see him.
Sure.
I want to see the president. But didn't he run on an Earth First platform? And isn't he kind of enabling all this hate group Home Guard stuff? And now he's advocating and lobbying for immigration and trade deals?
Here comes the new Brent theory.
Oh,
about the show.
Hold on. Let me get my tinfoil hat here. There we go.
Well, this one's less tinfoil because I think it's more actually that makes sense. So the president ran on a platform of preserving Earth culture, which gave rise to the Home Guard. He got reelected. But since his reelection, what we have seen is we have seen him suggest or commission or whatever a celebration of all alien religions. Mm-hmm. Remember that episode, Parliament of Dreams? That came from Earth Central. Of, hey, let's celebrate the cultural diversity around us in one place. And this is going to carry all the way out to Babylon 5 as well. Hey, let's talk about having freer alien immigration and broader alien trade policies. And we hear him even say, or the reporter said, he's inviting aliens to just come to Earth.
Yeah.
This guy's not anti-alien. This guy is a guy who ran on a platform to get reelected. And now he's doing the politician thing of actually just doing whatever the heck he wants to do now that he's reelected.
Wow.
He just ran to get elected, not because that's actually who he is. That's just what his base says that he should have done. And now he's just kind of doing the typical, like I say, the typical politician thing.
And that's why Home Guard tried to assassinate him.
There it is.
Bingo.
There it is. That's my theory. We'll see if it pans out.
I love it.
But I think that's going to be a thing to come back for Luis, or at least it should. Of, you said this is what you're going to do, and now you're not. So
yeah,
that's going to stir some trouble.
That's good. Well, Brent, I think we've reached the part of the show. I think it's time. This is where we boil everything down. We see if this show has kind of a Star Trek-y quality to it. Like if it has a deep moral message, a message at all, some sort of a meaning, if it holds a mirror up to society, or if it gives us hope. That there is hope for a better future, and we do this by grading 0 to 5 deltas. We also ask, should we have watched this sooner? So, Brent, how do you rate Survivors?
I'm going to leave this with like a half of a star of a delta. I'm going to give that to you first. This was not a very Star Trek episode. Had this been a Star Trek episode, this would have been a Star Trek episode that's not a very Star Trek episode. Yep. Let me explain why. They did in this episode what Star Trek has never done or would never do. And they did it in a way that Star Trek would never do it. I'm not saying that Star Trek would never tackle the issue of drugs or addiction. They certainly have. You remember the episode, The Game? I'm allowed to say it now. So don't buzz me.
We're in the space. It's cool.
Remember the episode, The Game?
Yep.
In TNG, right?
Whole ship got addicted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But what we saw here was not some futuristic sci-fi version of somebody who has an addiction, who is struggling with it, and somebody who falls off the wagon and, you know, just kind of goes oops and jumps right back up and he's fine by the end of the episode. That is not what we saw here. That's why this is not a Star Trek episode. This is not how, honestly, I've not seen TV do this very much. Certainly not 90s TV.
Right.
You know, we may see that in some of today's stuff if it becomes like a big, huge plot point. But this is something that 90s TV really did. When he took that drink, I told you earlier, I screamed because I was devastated for him. Addiction sucks, Jeff. Mm-hmm. To anyone out there who's ever been in the midst of addiction, to anyone out there who is in recovery, it sucks. I said before, I'll say it again. It makes you do what you don't really want to do when you're in your most honest self. So he feels guilt about what's happened. He goes, he takes the drink. He makes the choice he shouldn't have made. He immediately knows that he shouldn't have made that choice. He comes back at the end and he's like, I don't know if I'm more upset at the fact that I took the drink or the fact that I liked it as much as I did. He's incredibly honest about where he is. I used to do this. This used to be me. I thought I had beaten this. What I really hope is they don't forget this next week or in the weeks to come, because you know what he's done? This is a guy who, for however long he's been sober, now he's back to day one. And anyone who's ever been in recovery will tell you it's just one day at a time. Thankfully, he didn't seem to go on a big bender and have to come back, because that's hard. That's really, really hard. Thankfully, this was at least as far as we saw, this was a one-time thing. I hope he also, for his sake, because I care about Garibaldi now, I don't want to see him secretly struggling with this in his quarters, you know? But he's back on day one, and he needs to take this one day at a time. And I'm not saying that they're going to have a full 12-step program in Babylon 5 that they're debuting or showcasing or anything like that. But this is a part of his character now. And once you're an addict, you're always an addict. And addicts will tell you that. Like, you have to understand that. And you know that. I can never have a drink again. Alcoholics will tell you, I can't have a drink again because I'm an alcoholic. Not because I used to be. Because I am. I still am. And so I can't do that. And now I'm in recovery. I'm so many years sober, but that's me. That's where I am. I really wonder where they're going to go with this with Garibaldi. I love the fact that they put this out there, though, and that they put it out in the way that they did. I wish, particularly for the sake of my friends who are in recovery and for anyone who has ever been there before, representation matters. And to see somebody who's actually going through this, especially back in the 90s, oh my gosh, that'd be something else. But this wasn't very Star Trek. This doesn't give you hope for a future. This doesn't. Maybe you could say it holds up a mirror to society, but it's not holding up a mirror to society saying, be better. This is just holding it like, hey, here's what a certain segment of the population is, what it kind of looks like. We're not making it better. They're not giving you answers. There's none of that in this episode. Was this a good episode? Meh, not really. Again, there were moments in this episode that I really thought were very well done. Almost all of them have to do with Garibaldi. How about you, Jeff?
I think this was a really good episode that was executed very poorly.
That's a much better way to say it. I'm going to say it like that from now on, if I remember. Yeah,
because I think it did a lot of really important things. And if I think I say this a lot, where what I say now really depends on what happens in the future. And if they do, just forget that this whole Garibaldi thing happened, then shame on them right there. But I don't think that's the series of television we're watching right now. So I think it sets up a lot of great stuff. It really moves the home guard story the way it needed to. I think with your theory, oh my gosh, of course they're trying to assassinate the president. That makes complete sense. But I also remember that Malcolm Biggs, like, his big threat, we have friends everywhere. Friends everywhere. He said it over and over again. And this episode really showed how dangerous that can be. People on the station, people in the president's entourage, like, they're everywhere. I think this was important in that storyline. I think looking at it from the Star Trek-y kind of quality piece, this had a mystery, right? For the crew to work and kind of resolve in a weird way. There was the story of an accused innocent person going on and a person who's working with their disease. Those are kind of, you know, high level ways they write Star Trek stories or whatever. But as much as I want for this to be more, I wrote, I'm only giving this 0.5 deltas. I agree. Half a delta. It's not Star Trek, Right. Like it's got some stuff in here. And mm-hmm. I think the fact it's introducing this super hard and challenging question of addiction and recovery, that's a Star Trek. That is a Star Trek thing. This is a lot more real, a lot more gritty than Star Trek would ever do, but they introduced it. And I think Sinclair's message to him was fantastic, because I think the people who are working to stay in recovery, that's what they need. They need to know they're not, among many things. And it's different for every person, but just to know you're not alone. And kind of hearing your recap made me think how Garibaldi put himself out there for Sinclair with the trauma and the stress that he, you know, the post-traumatic stress that he's experiencing from just the war, the Minbari. Hey, I'm here for you, Jeff, let's talk. And then Sinclair just did the same thing to Garibaldi. I am really, really coming to love the friendships between like Garibaldi, Sinclair, and Ivanova. Yeah. They're just, they're really great.
And it, and I'm sorry, I didn't mention this. I saw my notes here. His trigger. She was his trigger.
Yeah.
You know, like that, that was the other piece. Cause he said at one point, he's like, her beating him down about being an alcoholic was not helping him not be an alcoholic, was not helping him get through there. And she wasn't trying to help him. Like, I get that.
But weird how that happens, right? Beating someone up about what they're doing wrong doesn't help them do better. Weird. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. But he said, I thought I had changed until you showed up. And there's like, there's so much truth in that of when an old demon shows up, when an old trigger shows up, of how dangerous that can be, particularly for an addict to go back to that sort of thing. Like, it just, oh my gosh. Like, there's so much real in this episode. Like, that's almost why it can't be Star Trek, because Star Trek takes what is real and makes it, it allegories it. There was no allegory here.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, there's none. It was right there in your face. So yeah, I'm with you on all of that. Jeff, what are we watching next week?
Well, that's a thing, Brent. So we need to have a little conversation. We have a problem.
Okay.
So a lot of our incredible community members have told us that there's a wrong way to watch Babylon 5 in order, and there are a couple of right ways.
Okay.
Apparently HBO Max, where we're watching this, is one of the wrong ways, and we just hit that crossroad.
Okay.
So the stream, so HBO has one specific episode next. It's got Signs and Portents next.
That's the name of the episode next.
That's according to HBO, and it's also the what they call the whole season. Season one is Signs and Portents.
Okay.
But that's what HBO Max has next on the Babylon 5 wiki and the list that our dear and good friend John Krikorian from the Trek Profiles podcast provided us with early on in this. Both have By Any Means Necessary as the next episode. And then the viewing order gets a little weird on HBO Max from here. So
okay.
How do we want to step? How do we want to proceed?
Well, you know, I'm, you're right. So many people have said that there's a weird viewing order and how things tend to go. And nothing against Wiki. I don't know. But listen, you mentioned John, John Krikorian, which, by the way, if you guys don't listen to his show, Trek Profiles, please go listen to that. But he was kind enough to take the time to lay it out. He's a huge Babylon 5 fan, and he's obviously not on the show for reasons that it would break the show. But John, if you're listening, thank you for your service. He was one of the people who kind of at the beginning helped us and encouraged us along the way. And one of those things, you're right, he said he did that. So I'm inclined, just because I know John a little bit and I want to trust him, I'm inclined just to go with what he tells us.
I'm thinking
the same. Say, if he says by any means necessary, then let's do by any means necessary. And we'll figure it out. We'll just follow his list.
Yeah.
Will be the one we go by.
And I want to acknowledge, because some people who've commented on it before, we've kind of said that we're trying to be as close as we can to that first time viewing experience as possible. But it looks like, based on the lists, based on a post on Reddit and a couple of these, because, you know, Reddit's always a great place to go and find the truth. But there's enough of a thread through everything that HBO Max specifically has done something weird with the viewing order that I am 100%. I feel 100% justified following John and his advice on this.
Okay. Let's do that. Well, so By Any Means Necessary is our next episode.
What do you think it's going to be about?
All of those. Oh, By Any Means Necessary. Oh my gosh.
Now we got it. Now we got to play the game.
I think it's going to have absolutely nothing to do with this episode. I truly believe that this very well could be at least the immediate end in the foreseeable future of Garibaldi in recovery as an addict and as a drunk. Like, I don't think this is going to be a thing that they dive into. I think this is a, he fell off the wagon once and now he's back on and he'll be fine. Like, I think that's kind of in the mid 90s. That's the way they're going to treat it, which is a shame. So I don't think it's going to have anything to do with that by any means necessary. I mean, okay, what are the threads that we're pulling on right now? There's the home guard thread. There's the Psycor thread, which those two are kind of interwoven in between each other. There's Londo versus Jakar, the Mimbari and what happened with Sinclair in the old war. And then there's whatever new crap they could come up with. So I'm going to go with new episode that they're coming up with. And is it fair to say I have no idea? Is that cheating?
A little bit, but you know what I think?
I mean, by any means necessary. I mean,
I think it shows that you're trainable, Brent, because of what we've learned through all these episodes is it doesn't matter what we guess. I mean, at best, you're going to get maybe 30% right.
Right. Right. I don't know, unless you hit it like 70% this week. But what do you think? If you have an episode called By Any Means Necessary, knowing where we are in the story so far, if you had to guess, what is it?
So I'm thinking it's going to be another home guard. We're going to pick up on the home guard piece. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking an organized alien resistance that will push back against home guard by any means necessary.
Oh, if I could bounce on that now that you've said that.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's the alien resistance bouncing back on it. I think it might be Babylon 5 fighting against, like joining up with the alien resistance to put down home guard by any means necessary. Will we see something with President Luis? I really hope that we get more of President Luis and home guard in this next episode. I hope it's a home guard episode and not something like another Londo and Jakar episode fighting kind of a thing. Although I'd be fine if it did, because by the way, Londo and Jakar continue to chew every scene that they're
in. Oh yeah.
Even in the bad episodes, like clearly one of the best parts of this whole episode were those two scenes three scenes, I guess, that those two guys were in. Like, fan freaking tastic.
It's so good. Well, hey, we're going to find out next week what By Any Means Necessary is about. Thank you all for joining us. It means so much to us that you tune in, that you interact with us, that we have the incredible conversations and have met the awesome people that we have. Don't forget to subscribe. If you're on YouTube, hit the subscribe, hit the bell. If you're an Apple Podcast, Spotify, Overcast, Stitcher, blah, 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 Good Pods, any of those, subscribe. And if you're able to leave a little star rating like an Overcast, leave a rating and review like in Good Pods, Apple, Audible, Spotify, please, please take the time to do that. It means the world to us. And we'll definitely share anything that we see that you send to us. We are going to share those reviews right here on the podcast. So until next time.
Be smart, Jeff. You can't pull this off.
Oh, yes, I can. Live long and prosper.
Jeff, no. You lose, wise guy.
It's not a Star Trek podcast.
It's my first time.